At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. At the Races, hour three, kind of whistling through the morning and having long-form conversations. Randy Moss joined us in hour one, and Nick Tamaro just now, hour two. And here's Andy Serling. Good morning.
Boy, it's really been downhill since Randy was on, huh?
Not true.
Randy was very smart in the apple blossom on Saturday. Came out the super basically on Twitter.
We talked a little bit, and getting in that group. I mean, that felt for the most part like the right horses.
I didn't get Ollie's Candy, who ran great, probably should have won. I actually only say had a small saver try because Randy threw her in.
Now, how about
like,
that?
The other three. I didn't get her. I know you liked her a little bit too.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, it's super paid like $2,500, right? Like $250 for a dime.
Wow.
Tri was pretty good. Tri paid like $128 for 50 cents or something.
And you know the horses, those that were rallying, obviously with the way that pace unfolded, and the fact that you know everybody except for Ollie's Candy, anybody attending the pace. I mean, there's a textbook chart, Andy. If people want to understand a collapse, and when you see you know horses that were up on the pace end up 11th, 12th, and 14th, that'll show people you know what an extreme pace looks like.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not quite sure I agree with that because with Ollie's Candy ran against it. I mean, I would argue.
Right. No, she ran unbelievable.
Right. I would argue the Count Fleet was a bigger meltdown than the Apple Blossom in reality. You know, that pace just completely incinerated. That
yeah.
race just fell apart in the last 16th of a mile. It's interesting. Break Even won the next race at the same pace, but she did it, you know, on her own.
Yeah.
I think this was the same pace on paper, but it was more contested, so maybe that's an argument. You know, it's also a combination between the actual pace and the ultimate race dynamics, and I think sometimes a combination of both. And, you know, I mean, a lot was made about the trip that the second place finisher had in the Count Fleet, the California Horses Day Mistake.
Flagstaff.
You know, people see these horses that make these big runs from last and they start to, you know, salivate. I think that's one of the reasons that some horses in the relatively recent past who have been deep closers have been overpraised. This sense that deep closers are somehow doing more than horses that are more forwardly placed, because especially in dirt racing, we're used to horses that are more forward being the top horses. But I don't think that's always the case. And Flagstaff broke a little slowly, but breaking slowly actually helped him because it sort of took him out of being forward at all in the race. He was a little bit interfered with early in the race when he sort of was going inside, and I think the horse on whoever was on the 11, that gray horse, Nitrous, kind of forced in the horse inside of him, and then that maybe forced Flagstaff out, and he would stay a little bit there. That probably cost him, maybe cost him the race, because it cost him more positioning. But on the other hand, in a race that was falling apart, they saved all the ground, it angled out the stretch, and got a very good trip after that. So while Whitmore was more closer to the pace, and he made the first move of the pace that collapsed, I'm not sure that Flagstaff really ran better than Whitmore in that race. It's close. I mean, I can understand an argument that Flagstaff arguably could have run the best race, but it's very close, I think, at least.
Well, and you know, there's part of this with Whitmore, and Flagstaff happens to be six himself, but Whitmore and his consistency and his annual, you know, march through Hot Springs, it really is – admirable. And for Moquette, you know, to keep him in this form for such an extended period, it's really, you know, people say all the time how they wish, you know, horses stayed around. Well, you know, here's a horse that was his 34th career start, 14th career win, 10 seconds, and, you know, threw $3 million in earnings. I mean, you want a gelding to be a fan of that, and has held his form his whole career. I mean, here he is.
Yeah, no, he's a cool horse. I agree. I mean, he's a really cool horse. I mean, he's a cut below the best sprinters. And I know he sort of got a very fortunate trip when he won the Forego over City of Light. He got a ridiculous ride that day. But in general, you know, you look at his, I think he's got one grade two win and eight starts and one grade one win and six or eight starts as well. You know, he's consistently proven not to be in the very upper echelon of the division, but when he's in the right spots, he's run very well, and he's a very consistent horse, as you say. And I think one of the things that Ron has done with him is, while he's taken some shots at times, and you can't blame him for that, in general, he's been properly selective with him. And I think that's one of the reasons that he's probably had the longevity and done as well as he is. While they've taken shots when the time was right, and occasionally it worked out, in general, he's been realistic with Whitmore. And in a division where all too often horses don't run that frequently, Whitmore's the exception to the rule, right? He seems to show up quite often. But usually, he runs a pretty good race.
Yeah,
he's a really neat horse. You know, he's the kind of horses you remember, right? You don't remember them because they weren't able to beat the best horses all the time. You remember them because, in general, when they showed up, they ran well.
Yeah, and he's a horse that's not put off by a wet track. He's been, I think we went through it yesterday with Ron, I think 11.
Better than a dry track, though.
Agreed. But went through it with Ron, I think 11. I think he's run at 11 racetracks.
Yeah, no, he's a warrior. I mean, he started out in Triple Crown Trail, which a lot of people won't
Yes,
remember,
he did.
Right?
Sure.
Run third in the Risen Star, maybe, or something. And third in one of those races.
You know, it's funny. I've got a few. I was going to do an exercise. I never got to it yesterday because Tina and I had to go to Saratoga. But there were some races that really you look at that he was involved in, including running after he broke his maiden at Churchill. He ran in the Delta Jackpot and had a little bit of a funky trip, but that was
$1 million race.
Yeah, and the Exaggerator won it over Sunny Ridge.
Speaking of course, they're still around.
Yeah.
But he had Arlen Punch. He had a trainer that was recently arrested, right?
That's true.
Next to him. Whitmore ran second in the Southwest. He ran second in the Rebel. He ran third in the Arkansas Derby.
Yep.
And 19th in the Derby. And then I'm guessing that Ron probably kept him going short after that.
Pretty much. Well, do you remember we talked about it yesterday. You remember when he came back and Ron had to ship him to Aqueduct for that comeback race that started it was crazy. Right. And he explained what happened with that.
There was some weird reason he ran there. Yeah.
Yes. Well, he'd been waiting. He waited all through the Churchill November meet for a race to go, and Ben Huffman could not get a race to go. And finally, he just, you know, the meet ended, and he said, well, now we got nothing to do until Oaklawn opens, and he needs a race. And so he saw the race at Aqueduct in the book. And he talked to LaPenta and the Southern Springs people, and they said, sure, all right, van him over. And so that's why he came to Aqueduct. It's pretty funny.
Those are the good old days before Sal brought in?
Well, yeah, I don't know. That Sal might have – Sal, let me see. I wonder if Sal was in already yet.
Just kidding.
Yeah, 11 races.
December 2016.
I got it in front of me.
Race up. I remember that. Now, you know, it's funny. I remember that.
He went off at 6-5.
Yeah, I'm going to look up that race right now.
I got it in front of me. He beat with Manny Franco, and he beat Will Did It, Jan's Reserve, Market Sentiment, Proven Commodity, and I Love Lulu.
Wow. Another horse claim by trained by that guy.
Actually, at that time, it was just Ron LaPenta and Harry Rosenblum were the owners at that time, before Southern Springs and Sol.
Like I said, it was the good old days. You ever have Sol in the show? Maybe you should have like a quarantine Sol in the show.
You think Sol's quarantined?
Yeah, I think he's being. I don't know. I should text him. I haven't talked to him. I would hope so.
We'll find out. We'll that'd be good, actually. He's still, you know, he's getting some horses into races, it seems.
Will did it pretty good, right?
Will did it?
Yeah. Will was okay. The Jacobson was. I always liked Jan's Reserve. He had some trips in races. I think I finally made a score with him one day. Market sentiment must have been set, right? No, wait. No.
Yeah, it was Seth and Bill Lawrence.
Okay, there you go.
And Rick Violet. Yep.
All right. What else going on?
Now I guess, you know, to some degree, we'll tread water through this week, looking ahead to this Arkansas Derby fantasy.
So what's the story of the Arkansas Derby? Are they going to get, what did they say, if they got 20 or more, they would split it?
That's the number. And Randy Moss says that he thinks that the 20 is right there. Nick and I discussed it briefly, and Randy and I discussed it briefly. But wouldn't you rather have one 14-horse race like we had in the Apple Blossom?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have a big opinion on it. So, you know, I mean, it's hard because I know California is making a lot of noise about trying to race, as opposed to some other tracks that are trying to race and not making as much noise. What does Baffert do? You know, how late can Bob ship Charlatan? Because he's not there. He's not Oakland, right?
No, not like Sadler is. Not with.
Can you ship in, right?
Well, that'll depend, Bob, on.
You're supposed to sort of know today, right? I know they draw tomorrow, but I mean, if you're somebody like Bob Baffert, or anybody else besides him that's not going to get in if it's one race and you know needs it to split, because Charlotte's not going to get in if it's one race, right?
Correct. That's the spec. Yeah, that's
you know.
It
and
seems...
so obviously he's wondering, you know, what are they going to do with the San Diego Derby? I mean, let's say for argument's sake, you know, San Diego's allowed to start racing the following week, and they say we're going to run the San Diego Derby. I don't know what they're going to do. These are all
right.
You know, guesses on my part. I'm not trying to suggest that. You know, or 2 weeks, you know, the 16th or something. Does Bob think, well, what the heck? I mean, does it really matter at this point? I can still get him to whatever races should come up in June or July or wherever. Maybe he thinks, you know, I mean, or would you say you're going to have an idea at that point? I mean, obviously, if he's not getting in, it doesn't really matter what he thinks. He has no choice. It's an odd situation, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
The whole thing becomes particularly unusual. I mean, you want to see Charlatan run. You don't know how far he wants to go, but my God, his last race was crazy good.
And he and Nadal came up with Randy Moss too. They both worked yesterday, and
Nadal's not beating Charlatan. I mean, without something unusual happening. I'm not as sold on Nadal as everybody else. I think the rail got very good late in the day at Oakland last time. I mean, granted, he survived a solid pace, no question about it. There were some silly rides in there. It was a wet track. Maybe he's okay. I'm not as sold on him. I don't really know who else is in the field. And listen, you don't know what Charlton's going to do. Is that, you know, distances get longer, the race get more competitive. But, Jesus, I mean, Charlton's about as exciting a horse as there is in the game right now. I know he's only had two starts, but it's been against nobody, but he just turned it on in the stretch last time.
Yeah, we'll continue to monitor and see who else. You got the Florida contingent. You got some that'll come over from New Orleans.
Who's scheduled to run?
Let me look at my list. Governor Morris is going for.
No, he's not winning unless a lot of horses don't show up.
We lost. I guess Patrick is not coming. With his Nadal, Wells Bayou for Cox, King Guillermo, the Tampa Bay Derby winner.
It's interesting. Both of those horses have speed. None of them are good enough to win this race, in all likelihood, but both of them have speed. And, you can't imagine that they're not going, right? Wells Bayou goes, and that's why he's been effective. He's had, sort of candy trips. King Guillermo's obviously not rating after what he did at Tampa. I don't know why they rate him. So now you're talking about a horse with speed. Who else?
Governor Morris, Accession for Asmussen. Storm the Court is coming for Peter Urton. Farmington Road out of the late run in the Rebel.
That Oaklawn race they used to run the Derby.
Yes, that's right. That's right. The Oaklawn Stakes, I should say. Tayshan for Baltus. I got to take Sheriffs off that list because he's not coming. He's not coming. Dale's thinking about attachment rate.
Who's he?
I mentioned that horse to you.
He's not the horse that Dale ran in the Goffin, is he?
It is. And then who else? There's others. There are some others here that I don't have updated on. I haven't been as attentive as I should be to my Derby trail list.
Well, there's a lot of other racing to worry about, Steve.
Yeah. Hold on here. I will get you some of the ones that I've lost track of are the New Orleans, New Orleans contingent.
To be fair, is there really anybody from New Orleans that you're taking that seriously?
There's going to be a big spread between, obviously, 7 weeks between going seven or even more? Seven? I think 7 weeks.
From the Louisiana Six.
Yeah, I mean, you could have, here we go. Here's a couple of other, that Shooter's Shoot, that Peter Urton that got into the throwdown with Blackberry Wine.
Do you know where Steve Shane is qualified?
No, Blackberry Wine is, not Shooter's Shoot.
Blackberry Wine.
Yeah. Yeah, Blackberry Wine is intended for this race. There's Pneumatic, the Steve Asmussen that won on the undercard on Oaklawn Stakes Day. Soros for a resurgent Gustavo Delgado.
I think I saw his PPs. I'm not particularly afraid of him.
Well,
isn't he entering the Florida Derby? The Florida Derby?
Did he?
Guys or something?
No.
Yeah, he was. He was somewhere.
Was he?
In Florida.
Oh, and scratched?
He was either in that allowance race the day before the Florida Derby or the Florida Derby.
Well, no, he wasn't in the Florida Derby. He might have been in the allowance race.
Or he may have entered and scratched. I don't know. But he was definitely, I definitely remember looking at his PP. He's not much.
Gotcha. Well, I think he's only run two or three times.
Okay. He still might not be that much horse, right?
Maybe.
Those races do tend to get a lot of filler.
They do.
Absolutely.
There actually is that race that you mentioned. It's funny, since this came up, there is that race that they're going to that they put on the over, you know, they put as an overnight stake for 3-year olds at Gulfstream that Michael Akow talked about, the unbridled. There's going to be just a $75,000 stake, but there'll be some horses probably that are, you know, there'll be some Hazarai that, you know, might have intentions for later in the late spring and summer and show up in whatever stakes, you know, end up
well,
being
they all have intentions. The question is, do they get there?
That's right. That's right. I guess Anne O'Dor is a possibility as well for.
He ran giant his last race at Fairgrounds. He really felt dangerous off that race.
He's
what happened to him?
I don't know.
Did they ever have an excuse for that disaster?
They no, not really. Not really.
That was crazy, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I was a little bit of, you know, kind of a fan. I was kind of rooting for him to come back as a good 3-year old. Doesn't always happen, right?
It's, you know, it's hard to know. I don't think, you know, you can't like Anna Dora as the last race. I mean, he ran so badly, maybe something went wrong. You know? But he's certainly better than that in his prior races. Still, 1,000 words is sort of, you know, maybe some of those races weren't as strong as, you know, you thought they were originally, right?
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair.
1,000 words seems to have really gone the wrong way.
Agreed. I was a huge fan. Still am. Here we go.
I realized why I wasn't at Aqueduct the day that Whitmore won. I was at, that was the day that Dan Altine won the Hollywood Derby at Delmar. I was at Delmar.
Oh, cool. I remember when you went out there. That's right.
So do I.
I would hope so. One more name, by the way, Silver Prospector. Silver Prospector for the Arkansas
he's
Derby.
Probably, you know, a somewhat interesting horse. I mean, he and Gouverneur Morris are in a sort of similar, you know, like a cut below as far as their speed figures, but close enough that if the race should fall apart, they can get a piece, right? I know Silver Prospector didn't run well in Louisiana Derby, but that was a sort of a ridiculous no-pace, you know, merry-go-round race, right?
Yeah, that's
nobody
it.
Nobody made any ground at all in that race.
So let me see. What do we got here? That's going to give us, that's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14. That's 16 horses that we've gone through.
Well, I mean, you know, it's problematic if they come up with sort of, you know, 5 or 6 more horses that don't belong at all to make it into 2 split divisions. So
I agree
with your argument that 14 are better. The only reason it's really even being discussed, honestly, I think seriously, is Charlatan. You know, if it weren't for Charlatan, you know, wanting to run and not being able to get in an oversubscribed field, then I don't think anybody would be pushing for there to be 2 divisions. So it's kind of a weird situation, right? And we do want to see Charlatan run. I mean, I certainly do. A racing fan, and he looks terrific. But I guess that's the problem with these late starting horses, right? And now it's a problem because there's not enough races to go around. To say the least, right?
To say the least, yeah, exactly.
You know, you lost the San Anita Derby, the Bluegrass, and the Wood.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, whether or not the San Anita Derby is going to be run is very much up in the air. I think Bob would probably be less concerned if there was, you know, a general feeling that San Anita would be running relatively soon. And the San Anita Derby would be one of the races they would be running.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it seems like John Sheriffs is betting on the come, too.
I guess. Makes sense.
Yeah.
He would get in, though, wouldn't it?
Honoré Peep, yeah, he probably would get in.
Yeah, he was second in the San Felipe or something, one of those.
Yes, or the Lewis.
Hadn't he run a stake race before, or no?
I think he did. I think he did. Maybe in the, he had 3 candidates, right? Yeah, the Felipe, the Vicente, and the Lewis.
I guess he's thinking more in line of the fact that he doesn't have to be that concerned with a lot of races until
exactly.
later in the summer. So
exactly right. That's the.
I mean, I think if you're Baffert and doesn't get in, it's not the end of the world. It's not, you know, it's there's got to be a race for him at some point somewhere, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, assuming that we have some races somewhere.
Well,
soon
it's hard to know. It's hard to know when,
exactly.
you know, when the Triple Crown races are going to be run. You know, we haven't made any said anything about the Belmont and Stronach hasn't said anything about the Preakness.
Nope.
You know, so it's a crazy time. It's a crazy time in a lot more important ways than horse racing. So.
Very true. Well, and you know, part of that, Andy, the interest level that has been increased in the game just by virtue of the exposure and the ADW account proliferations and interest, and then the viewership numbers which came out yesterday from the weekend that were gaudy.
They were good, right?
Oh my God, it was ridiculous. Crazy.
Our show was pretty well received, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see, because people knew I wasn't on.
No, but I'm
pumped. That's got to be helping.
I want to ask you one. I've asked a question of everybody this morning, Randy and Nick, and then John White's going to join us next. In looking at the, you know, we've been looking at Fonner today with Nick. We went through the sequence for the force out of the pick five.
Better him than me.
The conditions, Andy, are really, you know, very simple, and it makes for kind of some fun handicapping in terms of, you know, trying to sniff out horses that kind of got into the condition and may have a class edge. And the question I asked Randy and Nick, and I'll ask you too, for new players that are getting acclimated to handicapping the game. Any suggestions for understanding the condition levels and because there is a complexity.
I'm the wrong guy for that question.
Well, how did you personally when you were learning the game as a kid?
Never been overly caught up in conditions in general because I sort of know who the horses are and they're running the races they belong in. Otherwise, occasionally they're out of conditions. But, you know, I think one of the things that struck me when I was much younger, because while thoroughbred racing is what captured my attention, when I got interested in racing, I went to Saratoga Harness a lot more than I went to the thoroughbred racing, right? Because they were running, at first they were running April through October, and then very shortly thereafter, while I was in high school, they were running all year round.
Yeah.
So I worked the harness track all the time. And the difference, of course, between harness racing and thoroughbreds is their conditions are opposite, right? Harness racing was things horses have done, I believe, as opposed to horses haven't done, right? I believe back then, I feel like harness racing was winners of X over X, you know what I mean? And
right.
Thoroughbreds were non-winners of. So that was always the difference. But, it's not something that I focus on because I'm more focused on horse to horse and, you know, whether they match up with each other. And, you know, I'll notice occasionally when a horse is out of conditions, per se, but it's so rare that I'm not sure why it's a major factor. And why is it a major factor in handicapping, out of curiosity? Other than, you know, sort of these hodgepodge races and how these horses get in. But I'm more a believer that the fastest horses win. So I'm not really looking at that much. I don't know.
Interesting. Because I think it's
do the others just look at it that much.
Yes, to some degree, and in the question comes from an angle of learning the basics and just looking at the individual races and just even understanding what it all means. I mean, it because it is overwhelming. I mean, when you start to try to distinguish the different categories, and it used to be much more distinct than it is. It seems.
Well, the biggest
now.
Mistake we make is touting people with handicappers that have no credibility, not assuming people are smart enough to pick up nuance. And to me, if you're going to start people that are just getting in the game, I think you should start with speed figures.
Interesting.
Look at the buyer's speed figures and find the horses that, you know, looking at their last five races, let's say, in general, and seeing the horses that are just fast enough to win. Because the last thing you want to do is get people onto horses that, no matter what happens, aren't fast enough to win, right? And those horses may win once in the blue moon, but I don't think you want to put people into stab situations. I mean, if some people want to stab, right, that's their business. But I think for newcomers, you want them to at least feel they're involved in the race. If they're betting horses that aren't fast enough to win, much more often than not, they're going to be betting horses that are never in contention. That's not going to help them, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, understanding the past performance as far as, and Randy is somebody that's well acquainted with making pace figures because he makes them. He made them for the forum for a long time.
Sure.
So, you know, understanding horses' relative speed, I mean, may seem a little esoteric, but a sort of general concept of how the races are going to be run. And that's why the time form pace projector can be a very helpful thing. And I think a product like time form, you know, gives that a person an idea. Look at how it sets up and you know, does this race figure to have a fast or slow pace? It's not going to play that way. But I think you want to get in that direction. But I think speed figures would be the first thing you want to show them. And I'm not saying that they're the be-all and end-all. But, geez, I can't think of a more important thing than whether or not your horse is fast enough. There may be different arguments of who the fastest horse is. But there's no real argument that in general, most people will agree on the horses that are too slow, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. And in fact, it's funny you couch it in that term, because when I went through the Fawner sequence myself today, you know, it was a lot easier, you know, to cross out horses that you just can't win.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, some of the better picks you'll make in the handicapping are almost positive elimination picks.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the Apple Blossom was a race where there was a lot of positive elimination. There were a number of horses that were just, you know, three or four horses were just over their heads. And then, you know, you make decisions about the pace. And for me, it was sort of cut and dry. The two horses, I mean, obviously the Come Dancing Morning Line was an embarrassment. But she, to me, had no chance. Neither Ferengetti had no chance, because I didn't think she was going to be able to deal with the pace. Figured it would be too strong for her, even if she had cleared. And she can't win ratings. She's a weird horse. She's a very good horse. She just is not interested in racing when she can't get a lead. So I thought that race was very much a process elimination race. And sometimes that's the best way to handicap. But I'm not sure. I never thought about how I would teach a handicapping class. And maybe one day you talk about conditions, but I wouldn't be the right person for that. I always thought if I taught a handicapping class, I'd get different people that were experts in different things and bring them on to teach their strengths.
Which is great, and that you think back to those handicapping expos and the seminars that kind of did that, you know, with the various disciplines and.
Yeah, I mean, good for me, I wouldn't have to teach any of them. I could just bring in relative experts.
I love it. I love. Listen, I saw. You
I don't
know,
want to take any more of John White's time.
I appreciate it.
I know he's sitting home by the phone waiting for a call. So why don't I go?
Sounds good. I appreciate the visit, and
I appreciate being called.
We'll talk next week, and we'll have a better feel for the Arkansas Derby field, which draws on Sunday.
Thanks, Steve. See you later.
Andy Serling, everybody, the New York Racing Association, and continue to wait and watch, and the horses at Belmont continue to work on a steady basis. Hopes the, you know, toward the middle of end of May that... what do we got? 10 days? We probably got another 4 weeks to hang in here before we get started back in New York. Let's take a break. Last of the morning. What do we got? 20 plus to fill out. John White, close it out the morning. Hope you've been enjoying it. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder's Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Little Kasabian. Always great. John White's going to join us momentarily. And as we wait for John, I want to mention that Thursday, Dave Siegel is going to join us from Equibase. And if you haven't seen them yet, there is the product that we talked about. Gosh, it's got to be probably 18 months ago. You should probably dig that out. We had the conversation with Dave as the GPS systems were being installed by Equibase and Jockey Club Information Systems. And now the charting is becoming available. And I'm going to dig through it the next couple of days. And Dave's going to join us Thursday. Steve Haskins with Joan again on Thursday, so we got to move Haskin again this week. So in the usual Haskins spot, 10:30 on Thursday, Dave Siegel's going to join us. And the charts are really interesting. And, you know, for those that, you know, ever got, you know, into the Trackus charting system, this has got that kind of information and more. Including, you know, either, you know, what do you call it? Oh my gosh, regression analysis, essentially, you know, how the horses slowing down and you know, the closing, you know, closing kick and so forth. And it's pretty, it feels like it's complex. And at first glance, and I started looking at it recently, and we're gonna get images of it, and Dave will walk you through. I think it'll be really useful, and it's some of the stuff that they kind of promised, that they anticipated there was going to be some next gen stats made possible by the GPS. They're calling it total performance data, and you can see it at Equibase. You know what? I'll put up links. I'll put up some links to it. The Oaklawn action, actually, while it's fresh in everybody's mind. All right, so that'll be cool. John White, standing by. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You were talking with Randy Moss about how much more information we have these days with the past performances that have so much more information than back in the 60s and 70s or in 1980 when I worked with Randy Moss at Louisiana Downs when I was with the racing form and he was working in the publicity department at Louisiana Downs, and the videos that we have and workout reports and so forth. And what is truly amazing, and I've said this before, the percentage of winning favorites has stayed virtually the same through all of this, which is just mind-boggling to me, because you would think that the horse players, with all of this additional information, that you would have a higher percentage of winning favorites, and yet that has remained very constant through all of this, and that is just absolutely incredible to me. Randy was talking about if you had a $3,500 claiming race for non-winners of two and a $3,500 claiming race for non-winners of a race since October, the big difference between those, and it was such an advantage to us back in the day when that kind of information wasn't listed right there in the past performances. I miss having a lot of those advantages when I was first handicapping. They didn't have the fractions in the form. They didn't have any trip comments. And if you did your homework, you had such an edge over the people that didn't do their homework. And the additional information at the fingertips of the horse players today have taken away a lot of those advantages. I remember sitting with my father, and we would handicap the races in a motel and separately. And then at the end, when we got done, we would discuss the card, and we'd get to a race, and my dad would talk about a horse coming out of a $3,500 claiming race and another horse that it was coming out of a $5,000 claiming race, and he'd say, well, the horse coming out of the $5,000 claiming race is coming out of a better race. And I'd say, no, he's not. And he'd say, well, of course he is. It was a $5,000 race against a $3,500 race. How can you say it wasn't? And I'd say, the $3,500 claiming race was wide open with no conditions for three-year-olds and up. The $5,000 claiming race was for non-winners of two Washington breds for three-year-olds only. And So the horse running for the higher claiming price was in a much easier race than the horse in the wide-open $3,500 claiming race. And my dad would look at me like I was from Mars, but I was right because I had done the homework and had found the difference between those two races. So Randy's point was well taken in terms of the differences than just the simple claiming figure that you see for a horse. So those were the subtle class differences that Randy were talking about. And as far as horse players introducing newcomers to the game, I thought Andy made a very good point. A very logical place to point them to would be the speed figures, the buyer figures. And when I was with Randy at Louisiana Downs in 1980, we became good friends, but we brought different aspects of handicapping to the table. Randy would sit there, and he had all these speed figures he would write on his past performances, and I was not very impressed with speed figures at that time because all we had in the public were the speed ratings, and speed ratings were just not very relevant, quite frankly. And they did help make them more relevant. They were originally based on the track record. So if you ran one-fifth of a second off the track record, you got a 99. If you beat the track record by a length, you got a 101. And then they realized that, well, if Man of War holds the track record and has held it from way back when, they that really made that not a very relevant number. So they started basing speed ratings on the fastest time in the last 3 years, which did improve them, but not anywhere close to what we have with Beyer figures, Thorograph, or Ragusan. And so I was impressed with Randy because it didn't take me very long to see how vastly superior these Beyer-type figures that Randy was making versus these, to me, useless speed ratings. But I brought trip handicapping to the table, and at that time, Randy was really not very much into that at all. And because I grew up on a track that was a 5/8 oval with lower-class horses and lower-class jockeys, I took such good trip notes that it really gave me an edge because, again, that those troubled trips were not right there in the past performances. And what Randy and I found was when he came up with a horse at Louisiana Downs in 1980 that he liked off the speed figures, and I liked the horse off the horse's trips and class, that we had such a high percentage of those horses winning that we would start really betting those horses pretty good. We didn't have a lot of money. We were young guys coming up through the ranks. But we would bet those horses pretty good. And believe me, we won a very, very high percentage of those races when we saw eye to eye.
I love it. And you know, that's one of the things that, as I think, as players, John, evolve and develop, you gravitate to whatever method helped you arrive at your first series of successes. And, you know, if it was figures and speed, you know, you tend to become a speed handicapper. And that happened to be, and also, you know, reading Beyer didn't hurt either. I mean, that, you know, that sort of led me anyway in one particular direction. If you were somebody that, you know, that maybe got to the game, I'll reference Andy Serling and Eric Donovan with their, you know, trips and traps. And, you know, if you grew up in a video accessibility era and, you know, there was so many people when, you know, replays became available, and when we would go to calracing.com because they had the big library of video, and suddenly, you know, you could really be a trip handicapper because you had the accessibility. I think that's one of the reasons, you know, the trip handicapping, you know, the visuals, the proliferation of and access to the visuals. So whatever helped you get, you know, to cash some tickets early in your development curve, that's what you gravitate to. And then, you know, as you try to evolve and learn more, you add whatever it is to your, you know, to the proverbial handicapper's toolbox. And as I said to Randy Moss, I ended up drawing the line. I tried to get through, modern pace handicapping by Brohammer, and I my eyes were crossed and I gave up. And I said, well, I'm not going to be a pace handicapper anytime soon. Now there's pace products that give you, you know, a very clear indication of what the pace projections were if you did that math. And, you know, that was complex, and guys had that edge, John. And then that edge went away because now everybody has access to that kind of information that works done for you.
Well, I will tell you one reason why I never became a real pace player, but pace is important because they say pace makes the race, and it does. But the problem in projecting pace is, and I know this from interviewing 8 billion jockeys during my life, is that you can draw up every plan in the book, but once those gates spring open, it can be such a whole different ballgame. For instance, look at Serengeti Empress. There's a case, as Andy said, if she gets the early lead, she's, you know, very likely, not very likely, right, but, I mean, she wins a lot of races when she gets the early lead. She doesn't win if she doesn't get the early lead. You can project a pace battle, and then one of the two horses, you know, doesn't break alertly or stumbles or bobbles at the start or whatever. I mean, you can undo all that pace handicapping right out of the box, but it's still important. I remember one of my fondest memories is standing next to my father on a Long Acres Mile day back in the 1970s, and in the race before the Long Acres Mile, it was an allowance race, and a horse that became one of Bobby Frankel's favorite horses was a one-eyed horse by the name of Strong Award. He was an Oregon bred by the Washington stallion Strong Ruler, and he was a really nice horse. He did very well for Bobby Frankel. He did well in California, but he also did well in the Northwest. He was a stakes winner in the Northwest, and he's running in this race, and on paper he was the class of the race, that he was the horse to beat. But there was a horse in the race called Royal Ruler, who earlier in his career had won the Washington Futurity, the Gottstein Futurity, which it is now. And he was a nice horse, too. But on pure form, you would like Strong Award for sure, because he was coming out of the better races. He was the classier horse and so forth. My dad was a big class handicapper. But Royal Ruler was strictly the only speed in the race. I mean, you looked up and down the line. You didn't need any, you know, time form this or whatever, you could look and you'd say, my goodness, this horse is just going to be left alone on the lead. And the kicker for me was one of the best jockeys I ever saw in my life in the Northwest, and I feel could have ridden anywhere in the country if he hadn't had lost a kidney. He won six races, at Golden Gate one afternoon, and that's Russell Bays's father, Joe Bays. And Joe Bays was on this horse that day. And Joe Bays rode very similarly to Eddie Delahousse, to where he was noted. In fact, Bob Benoit, the late publicity director at Hollywood Park, and then the general manager at Hollywood Park, was the publicity director at Playfair in the 60s, and he gave the nickname to Joe Bays the Heart Attack Kid because of winning so many races on the 5/8 oval from well off the pace. But like Eddie D, if you ever saw Eddie D on the front end, I loved it because I felt like, man, this guy's going to be really tough to beat whenever you saw him on the lead early in a race. And Royal Ruler went out to the lead in this race. So I was standing with my father. My father bet Strong Award, and who was like 8-5, 9-5, and I bet Royal Ruler, who was like 6-1. And they, at Long Acres, this was back in the early 70s when a lot of tracks didn't have the fractions that you could see during the race. Long Acres right. was the first track in the Northwest. And after the first quarter, I started laughing, and my dad looked over and he said, this is while the race is going. I said, what's so funny? And I said, the race is over. He says, what do you mean the race is over? And I said, I looked at the first fraction, and it was like 24 and change or whatever, and they're never catching this horse with Joe Bays with that kind of pace. And when they turned for home, Ken Dahl, who's become a steward in the Northwest, he was on Strong Award, and Strong Award made a move from about 8 lengths off the pace to get within about a length and a half, 2 lengths of Royal Ruler, and my dad kind of put his chest out like, I'm going to teach you a lesson, son, here. And Joe Bays had so much in the tank, it was ridiculous, and just kicked away and won by about 4. My dad just shook his head. But, I mean, that was, to me, that race was over from a pace standpoint right there on the clubhouse turn, basically. So pace is important, but, you know, there's just so many aspects to this game, and it's what makes it a wonderful game.
John, we only have really about a couple of minutes. Quick thoughts about, particularly about the Apple Blossom and the West Coast horses come into town and they get the money.
Well, I picked CC in my expressbet.com column and got almost a $10 win mutual there.
Yeah.
And my enthusiasm was diminished somewhat by the 14 hole because you knew going in that was daunting, but still I felt that she was the one to beat in the race. I thought Serengeti Empress would go favored. I said that in the column. I thought she was the likely favorite. But I thought she was vulnerable from, again, a pace standpoint. I mean, it just didn't look like it was going to go well for her. Kathy Berkey, a longtime bloodstock agent, is instrumental in the breeding of CC. Not only that, but CC's dam, Miss Houdini, won the Grade 1 Del Mar debutante when she was a two-year-old. And Cece, a half-sister to Papa Clem, who won Arkansas Derby the final year. It was a Grade 2 back in the days on HRTV when I kept just criticizing the graded committee for ridiculously keeping the Arkansas Derby as a Grade 2. And finally, the next year after Papa Clem, they did upgrade it to a Grade 1, which it's been ever since. But Cece is a really nice filly, and that back-to-back Grade 1 wins for her now.
And as we talked yesterday with Michael McCarthy, moves right at and with Midnight Bisou at the top of the distaff. category. John, I appreciate it, and stay busy, stay healthy, and we'll wait probably when we talk next. We'll know where things stand about a resumption of Santa Anita. They're waiting for an answer from the health department.
Plus the Arkansas Derby to look forward to. I'll tell you what, Nadal, to me, right now, if I were to pick in that race, and that's even if Charlton were to run in the race. Right now, the way Nadal's working, I'll go with Nadal right at this early stage for the Arkansas Derby.
I like it. John White, everybody. Post time, John, on your Twitter machine, and we'll check in with John next week. We'll get the full analysis because they're going to draw the card on Saturday. I'm going to pull up and send you out into the day. Will Rogers first and Fahner later. I'll have the pick five play up at the website in a little bit, and I'll write it now. Write it up now and have it up by, I don't know, 1:30, 2 o'clock. Wait for scratches, too. And we'll be back with you tomorrow, Wednesday, get together. Good luck today, everybody playing. Want to thank Randy Moss, Nick Tamaro, John White, Andy Serling, Casey on the board, you where you are. Talk to you in the morning at the races. Sirius XM.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.